This is Roy Bailey, and you're listening to Sheffield Live, number one for Sheffield music.
We're open for business live.
Good morning. It's just after 9 o'clock. It's Friday. It's the 17th of November, 2017. I'm Jamie Veitch. I'm your host for the next hour for Sheffield Live's business and social enterprise programme, Business Live. And we're broadcasting live 93.2 FM and sheffieldlive.org. Whether you're listening through FM radio or online, this programme is also available as a podcast from the Sheffield Live website. Talking podcasts. Last week's programme, we had a Marxist capitalist on. What's a Marxist capitalist? Well, Simon Biltcliffe, he's the MD of £31 million turnover Webmart. He's built that business over 21 years. It's been profitable for 21 years. And Simon believes in maximising not just the financial performance, but the intellectual and emotional return and satisfaction of his employees. He talked about how he does that, why he does that, and his philosophy in life and business. On the programme last week, if you missed it, then don't panic because the podcast is available on the Sheffield Live website. Fascinating to talk with Simon. It was also fascinating last week to speak with Vincent Tremu. He's an internationally acclaimed photographer, and he was speaking down the line from Senegal, talking about the new One Day I Will project set up to stimulate and support education for children, particularly in Africa, where Vincent's been taking a lot of photographs over the years. So if you missed last week's programme, don't panic. The podcast is on the Sheffield Live website at sheffieldlive.org. But that was last week. This is today. What's on this week? Well, I'm really pleased to welcome back to the studio Steve Knowles of Knowles Warwick. Steve's the MD of Knowles Warwick. And last time he was on the programme, I had a message from a listener afterwards who sent an email saying, it's lovely to hear an accountant who seems to have a heart and soul. They seem to think that that was quite unusual with an accountant. Who knows why? Anyway, Steve will be talking with us in just a couple of minutes. Also on the programme today, we have Dom Hodgson. He runs Pack Leader Dog Adventures. And Dom will be talking about the business of pets. Fascinating stuff there. So, before we turn to our interesting guests, what else has been going on this week in business and in social enterprise? Well, on the theme of social enterprise, it was Social Enterprise Day yesterday, World Social Enterprise Day. And who knew, hashtag who knew, was trending on Twitter all day with social enterprises all over the UK, feeling inspired by the campaign to demonstrate their successes, demonstrate what they do. And if you take a look at that hashtag, on Twitter, you can find out lots of fun, interesting facts and figures about social enterprises, their strengths, their resilience, their financial performance, their social impact, much, much, much more. And of course, in Sheffield, there are plenty of events, including the Social Enterprise Exchange annual conference all day yesterday, which I could see from tweets looked to be a great day. So what else has been going on? Well, a certain much-loved retailer, John Lewis, they've been accused of plagiarism. They turn their Christmas advertising campaign into a bit of an event. But the advert has been accused of plagiarism. It features a creature under the bed. And a children's author has said, you've nicked that idea from me. Perhaps John Lewis's creatives should have listened to our programme on Sheffield Live a couple of weeks ago about protecting your intellectual capital and seen whether they would be infringing on someone else's. What else is going on? Well, here in the Sheffield City region, there have been 37,000 new jobs created since 2014 through the creation of new businesses and through international investment. There are 68,000 businesses operating across the city region. 650 of those are multinational companies. And these include recent investments from organisations like McLaren Automotive, Boeing, Amazon and Hitachi, who've chosen to locate in the city region as well. And Sir Nigel Knowles, who's the chairman of the Local Enterprise Partnership, has said that the city region has built a truly global brand synonymous with quality, with expertise, with a let's get it done, work ethic and a significant sense of community. And he added that the region's now building on its privileged position and doing the legacy proud, seeing transformational change in modern manufacturing and the tech sectors, particularly high performance components and more. And he says that further announcements will be coming up in terms of what's going on. The tourism and the leisure economy in the city region has also been boosted with developments like Peak Resort. And then, of course, on top of that, Doncaster Sheffield Airport has launched 15 new routes in the last year, connecting the city region better internationally. So loads and loads going on. Creative and digital sectors have grown faster than anywhere else in the UK as well. And that's been spearheaded by organisations like Sheffield Digital. They had their annual conference this week as well. So lots going on there. What do you think? Do you think the city region is an exciting place to be, to do business, to run a social enterprise, to run your company? Let me know. Get in touch with the programme. All you need to do is email jamie@sheffieldlive.org, text 07904 272 200, send a tweet to Sheffield Live, or find me, Jamie Veitch, on Twitter. I think it's time that we turned to that accountant with heart and soul that I mentioned. That was a comment from a listener last time you were on, Steve. Welcome back to the Sheffield Live studio, Steve Knowles of Knowles Warwick. How are you?
Hello, good morning, everybody. I'm very well, thank you, this morning.
Good. Thanks so much for coming in today. Now, I've invited you in today because next week it's the budget, and you have been helping business owners to achieve their dreams and their ambitions through accountancy and through business advice. And I wondered what your wish list for the budget would be, what you predict might be announced by the Chancellor as well. So I don't know whether you want to start with your wish list or your predictions or both. What's going to happen?
Let's start with my wish list, please.
Okay.
So what probably most people aren't aware of is the vast amount of tax and legislation law that we have. And when we had the budget announced in the spring, which was ultimately abandoned because of the election.
Yes.
The finance bill was 800 pages long.
It's a hefty tome.
800 pages. And that's not 800 pages of large type. That's 800 pages of small type. And that is just an impossible for people to get their head around it. And given that we all are deemed to know all the law in the country, because ignorance of the law is not an excuse, that's 800 pages of legislation that everybody has to learn. It just makes a mockery of the whole thing.
That's a big, big piece of legislation. So you mentioned something there that's interesting. Ignorance is not an excuse. Do a lot of people excuse their shortfalls when it comes to compliance by saying, well, I simply didn't know?
Yes, because the rules and the regulations are so contrived.
Right.
And tax is not a logical subject. So no. You can't apply logic to it and think, oh, that's how it's going to be, because it never is. And there are so many traps.
So many traps indeed. But then I suppose that's why people pay their accountants, their business advisors, to help them to ensure that they do comply. What one reason. Now, a wish list saying, okay, it would be great if it was less than 800 pages. Mm-hmm. That
would be a start.
That's a start.
Yeah. But the second thing I got on my wish list was the threshold for VAT.
Yes.
If you are operating a business, there is a threshold for VAT, which is around £85,000.
Yes.
And there is a lot of conversation about that limit being reduced.
Indeed.
And over the decades that we've had VAT, back to 1973, the reason for continuously increasing it to the maximum that the European Commission would allow was because of the arguments revolving around red tape and the fact that small businesses don't need or don't have to or shouldn't have to comply with all the additional red tape that VAT brings. The problem is that it skews the marketplace.
Right.
And the reason it skews the marketplace is I want you to think of two businesses on the high street. One registered for VAT and the other not registered for VAT. And I always give this example of hairdressing. So you've got two hairdressers side by side on the high street, one registered for VAT, the other not registered. And if you believe in a market economy, where the market sets the price of a haircut is whatever it is. So let's just imagine the price of the haircut is £12. If it's £12, both hairdressers will be charging £12.
Mm-hmm.
The one that's registered for VAT will be paying £2 of that 12 over to the government.
Yes.
So who is paying the VAT? Is the consumer paying the VAT or is the business paying the VAT? It's actually the business that pays the VAT because £12 is the market price. So if you are registered for VAT, you're at a disadvantage to non-registered traders. So if you bring the VAT threshold down to very small levels so that all you do is ignore hobby businesses, then it puts a level playing field into the marketplace. And the other thing that the VAT threshold does is it stops businesses growing. Because once they get to the point where they get to the 85,000, they don't want to go any further.
Yes, so if their turnover is around 70, 75, 80, nudging that £85,000 threshold, they will keep it under the threshold rather
than
grow.
That's right. Because coming back to the hairdressing example, if you think about it, a sixth of their turnover is suddenly lost in VAT.
Yes.
So you do £85,001, you're suddenly paying a sixth of £85,000 in VAT, which is a colossal amount of money.
So you've just made a really interesting point there, Steve, and it might not necessarily be a point that is popular with everyone, saying actually bring the VAT threshold down to create a level playing field. And where should it be? What would you suggest would be a good point? You said, perhaps just above hobby businesses, so that pretty much every business is competing. Well, where is that threshold?
I think it's somewhere in the region of about 5 to 10,000 a year, somewhere in that sort of area.
So
so it's a huge change. And you have to remember as well, again, this is something else that people in business don't readily know about, is that there's a new set of regulations coming in under the banner of making tax digital.
Yes, making tax digital. There have been delays around this.
That's right.
Terms of implementation, ultimately they will come in and businesses will be reporting quarterly, won't they? And
they will, from April 19, for VAT purposes, businesses will be reporting directly out of their accounting systems.
Yes.
You will press a button on your screen and all your data will go to HMRC.
So big changes afoot there.
That's right.
So if people use sort of cloud-based online accounting systems, they'll press a button and be able to send their accounts.
File their VAT returns first from April 19.
Yeah.
So again, that puts VAT-registered businesses at a disadvantage to unregistered VAT businesses.
So the point you're making then is create a level playing field. Now, there'll be a bit of an uproar about that from quite a lot of businesses that are trading between sort of, I suppose, 10, 20, 30K up to around 75K, who are very happy about the fact that they don't have to pay VAT at the moment. And you make a coherent argument in favour. But what would you say to those businesses if they were to say, well, suddenly it's unfair, suddenly we're going to lose some of our turnover?
I think it will give them the opportunity to grow their businesses significantly bigger than the artificial cap at £85,000 that currently happens. And I've seen businesses where they're faced with the prospect of registering. They knuckle down to it, they deal with it, and their businesses take off.
Yes.
Because that cap is no longer ahead of them.
Yes. That's a really interesting point. And going back to your example of the hairdresser, I mentioned a comment that Ruth Nick A, who is executive director at McLaren Automotive, and she was speaking at the MADE Festival last week, and she said, "Nobody needs a McLaren. They have to want it." Now, I suppose if you're a hairdresser and you can position your business in the point where your customers want your particular haircut at £40 or £50 or £100, I mean, these prices are charged by many hairdressers, rather than £12, then you're in a much better position anyway as a business anyway, in terms of attracting high value custom.
Yes, that's right. My £12 was easy. It was just to make the maths easier.
Yeah, indeed, indeed. So we've talked through the VAT threshold, the VAT threshold. You've mentioned in passing making tax digital and IT systems. Is there anything else you want to add on those? Or should we talk about your next item in terms of wish list or prediction?
Well, in terms of making tax digital, I would just say to everyone in business, please go and talk to your accountants, because this is a revolutionary change that's coming through.
Yes.
It's going to affect you and you need to deal with it.
You need to be ready for it. Okay, great. Talk to your accountants now. Good stuff. What else might be in the budget?
Well, I'm fascinated by the B word and the Brexit thing.
Yeah.
And I find it fascinating that we want to talk about all this international trade we're going to do, but we can't even get our airport infrastructure right to enable people to travel. So how are we all going to be able to do all this travelling when we're already at capacity with our airspace?
Are you thinking Heathrow here?
Well, I find Heathrow a bit of a fascination, because if you put the infrastructure in place, why can't it be Doncaster? You know, if you put the infrastructure in place, it's an hour from Doncaster down to London. It pretty much takes an hour to get from Heathrow into central London.
Certainly does.
You know, all we have to do is put the infrastructure in place and Doncaster could be the next London airport. It just takes a bit of imagination.
It takes imagination. Sometimes imagination appears to be lacking in policymakers, rather sadly, but that's a really interesting point. Now imagine that, turning Doncaster into the hub. Great for the economy for the north as well. Takes the pressure off the south, and the infrastructure could be there. So
could be done. Could be done. And actually, on the subject of the south, there was an announcement this morning about a report where they were talking about building hundreds of thousands of houses in the sort of Milton Keynes, Bedford area, and they were talking about how much additional rail infrastructure would need to be put into place. Well, where are those people going to travel to? The only place they're going to be travelling to is London.
Yep.
And that's just another focus on the southeast. Why can't we spend that money in the north developing houses and infrastructure in order to balance the country up?
Yes. Now, houses and affordability of houses for people working in London. Affordability of houses, full stop, has been an issue that politicians have liked to talk about, and they've talked about their intention to stimulate this and schemes such as Help to Buy, which many people have criticised by saying actually they just create a hothouse and don't actually do anything to meet the needs of buyers. They help the developers ultimately. So you're thinking again, have some imagination here and look at house building, but look at house building in the north of the country. Is that
absolutely
right?
Absolutely. And actually, there are some people who take the view that young people today make a conscious choice. Because we live in a society which wants it now, basically what younger people may be doing is spending their money on things that they can consume now. Whereas my generation, and I know that's the sort of thing that people don't like to hear, we would save up and we would put the money aside to raise the money for the deposit to be able to buy our first house.
Well,
in our want it now society, people are not prepared to make that effort.
There's a lot of talk about that, isn't there, this week? And we've heard about people saying, oh, honestly, if young people would only not buy sandwiches or even avocado on toast, then they'd be able to buy a house. But then other people have said, actually, that's not really the case, is it? You'd have to not buy a sandwich for 128 years to be able to afford a deposit, according to some maths that I've seen this week. And it's I think they're very easy and simple generalisations made on both sides of the argument there as well.
I would agree. But it's about the choices you make on a daily basis. You don't accumulate enough for a deposit by not buying one sandwich. It's about your attitude to life and your attitude to money.
I know. And I know you're really making a more nuanced argument there as well. So it's certainly an interesting one. But something that many people agree on is that the multiplier between average wages. So if you're running a business and listening to this, or if you're an employee and listening to this, the multiplier effect between average wages and house prices is very, very different now to what it was, say, 20 years ago, and so on, and efforts to address that. Let's move on to your next idea, or your next item for the budget.
Well, one of the problems that HMRC have is that they can't get their new systems and processes into place. And one of the reasons why that's happened is because George Osborne changed the tax rules in relation to what we call personal service companies.
Indeed.
Where contractors would operate through a personal service company to provide service to businesses.
Yes.
And in relation to the public service, they said they were no longer going to allow people to operate in that way. Yeah. Well, all the IT contractors said, OK, if you don't want us to do business on this basis, we don't want to come and work for you. So we're not going to provide the skills and infrastructure you need to put your new tax system in place.
Oh, dear.
And that's what's happened.
Right. So HMRC's faced its own skills
shortfall.
Right. And
of their own making.
Of their own making. And it's been mooted that these IR35 laws might apply beyond the public sector and be applied into the private sector as well.
That's there's a lot of talk around about that, and I sometimes don't know whether or not it's the tax professionals thinking of things that may happen, or whether or not they've picked it up from government consultations, because the government do consult about new ideas to see whether or not there's any sense in them.
Right.
And whether or not, which way that's happened, I don't know. So one of the things I'm going to be very interested to see on Wednesday is whether or not that is extended. I think it would be a major mistake to extend it into the private sector, because it's going to stop a lot of the entrepreneurial attitudes that people have. And a lot of these small personal service companies start out that way and then grow into something else.
And then become larger, take on employees. Yeah. But they start with one person.
That's right. Yep. And every business starts with one person.
Yeah. Okay. So you think it would be a great mistake to do that? Well, let's watch this space and see what Chancellor Hammond announces. I think you have a couple of other items on your list of what could take place in the budget, what could be announced.
Well, one of the things that I find totally fascinating is the subject of stamp duty.
Yeah.
What's the purpose of stamp duty? All it does is raise very small amounts of revenue for the government, for the public purse. But what it does is it acts as a huge brake on transactions, and particularly the way it's structured, the way that the percentages go up as the values go up, you start to get again problems in the marketplaces where those percentages, at the point at which those percentages change, and that just creates a distortion, which is, again, a nonsense.
So do you think it would be pragmatic for the Chancellor to remove it entirely, or to have a flat rate so that you don't create these breaks at each changing point in standards?
Particularly in relation to housing, if you think about how much people spend when they move house...
Yep.
The new carpets, the new curtains, the new often kitchens and bathrooms that people put into their houses when they move house. How much VAT is collected from that? It's significantly more than the stamp duty.
Right.
So if you abolish stamp duty and increase the fluidity in the housing market, the amount of VAT that would be raised would be significantly more than the stamp duty that's lost.
Okay, so that's a point that the Chancellor could consider, isn't it? And if the Chancellor were to announce, say, a reduction in the VAT threshold, that would be very unpopular. But often what Chancellors of all political stripes do is, on the one hand, give, and on the one hand, take away. I'm going to have to ask you a quick question. Are small businesses, and by small, I mean, sort of, I don't know, up to £1 million in turnover, as well as all the micro-enterprises, which make up something like 97, 98% of businesses and micro-enterprises is 0 to 9 employees, and they employ half the workforce as well. Now, are small businesses disproportionately penalised compared with large international businesses that are allowed to get away with things that might be legal when it comes to tax, but that some people are quite upset about? Or should we simply go, well, you know, this is how it is? And could the Chancellor actually do anything about it anyway?
I think that all the law we need is already in place. There's a very simple thing in the Taxes Act. And what it says is that the tax inspector must satisfy themselves that the amount of tax that's being paid is the right amount of tax. And that law applies to Amazon as much as it applies to my business and every other business in the country. The difficulty is that large businesses have a little bit more resource to be able to set things up in a slightly different way than a small business does. But the rules are all exactly the same.
Yeah.
They apply exactly the same to everybody.
Okay, I think that's a fascinating topic, and that's a fascinating sentence in the code that you talked about there. But I suppose, as you say, large businesses set up in a different way, and they have the resources to move their own resources around and to pay their divisions in other countries, like in Luxembourg, for example, a licensing fee or whatever. People don't necessarily like that, even if it's all legal.
What the law says is that a tax deduction is allowable if it's wholly and exclusively for the purpose of the business.
Right.
And all the tax inspector has to do is to show that that movement of money was not wholly and exclusively for the purpose of the business in the UK. If they can argue and win an argument that says actually the purpose of this is to move profit from one jurisdiction to another, it's no longer wholly and exclusively for the purpose of the business, and it's not tax allowable.
I see.
HMRC have got all the armoury they need.
Right, they've got the armoury they need. Mm. Okay, great. Well, that's been absolutely fascinating. It's been really, really great to discuss with you what might happen in the budget next week. Budget takes place, of course, next Wednesday, the 22nd. And Steve, you're active on Twitter yourself. People can get in contact with you. You're responsive, I know, to tweets.
Yes.
And, of course, online, informative website. Do you want to give out your website address and your Twitter address too?
Our website is knowleswarwick.com, and there's thousands of pages of information on there that's kept up to date. My Twitter feed is at knowleswarwick.
Indeed. Super.
So, yeah.
Grand. Well, thanks so much, Steve, for joining us in the radio studio today, coming back to Sheffield Live and talking about your predictions. That's been very interesting indeed. Steve Knowles, MD of Knowles Warwick. And Knowles Warwick has been helping business owners to achieve their dreams and ambitions through accountancy and business advice for many years. Now, Steve, I've asked you to choose a track of music. Do you want to just mention the track that you've chosen and why?
Yeah, my wife and I are celebrating our 40th wedding anniversary in early December. So the track I've chosen is Eternal Flame by the Bandles.
Brilliant. Thanks so much for joining us today, Steve. We'll play that now.
We're open for Business Live.
This is Business Live, Sheffield Live's weekly business and social enterprise programme with me, Jamie Veitch. We've been talking this morning with Steve Knowles, MD of Knowles Warwick. He has given his predictions for the budget next week. And if you've only just tuned in and you've missed that, then don't panic. The podcast of today's programme will be up on the Sheffield Live website later on today. But that was then, and this is now. I'm joined on the line now by someone who knows all about dogs, and the pet business in Britain is booming. There are 9.4 million dogs in the UK, but most pet businesses are doing things wrong. Dominic Hodgson is very much doing things right. He's joining me on the line now. Dom runs Pack Leader Dog Adventures. Dominic, hello.
Hello, Jamie. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining me today. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. Yeah, looking forward to this.
Fantastic. Now, Dom, can you just tell me a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Sure. So I'm Dominic Hodgson, as you said, just to confirm that. I am a dog trainer, and I'm also a pet business coach. So I help pet dog owners who love their dogs dearly, but they have no control over them. I show them how to control their dogs so they can have stress-free visits to the park. And I help pet business owners who love their businesses, but they wish they were making more money. And I show them how to market effectively so they can enjoy their business a lot more and help more people.
Fantastic. And you've written a couple of books about this. The first one aimed at pet owners themselves, which, as you say, helps them to train their dog, and their dogs can then behave, and they can have an enjoyable experience of looking after their dogs. Now, that's a very authoritative, excellent book. I've taken a look at it myself. And just on that front, before we talk about pet businesses, when people get dogs and people who have a dog that doesn't behave, what are the most common reasons for that, and what do dog owners do that you help them to change then?
Well, most people, we make a lot of wrong decisions. There's actually a lot of similarities between training a dog or getting a dog and running a business.
Yes.
So a pet dog owner, we get a dog and we love that dog dearly. We think that just because we love the dog, that he's going to be good. But sadly, that isn't the case. You know, so we allow the dog to do things that aren't conducive with good behaviour. So we allow them to sort of play with other dogs in the park, or chase pheasants, or chase pigeons, and roll in fox poo, this kind of thing. And then we wonder why it's difficult for us to keep control of them, why the dog keeps wanting to run away from us in the park all the time. And it's really similar with the business as well, because when we start almost all the pet business owners that I come into contact with, they're really passionate about dogs. You know, they started the business because they really love dogs, and they want them to sort of quit the rat race and pursue their dream of working with dogs. But they assume that passion alone is going to be enough for them to have a successful business. And unfortunately, it isn't, because what they end up with is they end up with some clients usually, but they end up working like long hours for very little pay because they haven't put enough thought into the marketing. Sorry, that was a big answer, wasn't it?
No, that's a really good answer, and that actually bridges very nicely from how you have used your expertise in terms of you obviously have enormous amounts of expertise in terms of helping people, helping individuals train their dogs, but you've then used your expertise to transition into a new area, helping pet businesses, helping people running pet businesses. And this is fascinating. Just this week alone, here in Sheffield, I've had three flyers, I think, now through my front door from people offering dog walking services, which is amazing. So it was clear that one of those flyers, it was someone doing something on perhaps a part-time basis. I don't know whether they were a student. I don't know whether they were doing it as a hobby business. One of those flyers came from someone that looked like it was a, you know, set up to be a business. You're helping people who are running pet businesses, and a lot of them are getting their marketing wrong, their positioning wrong. And as you say, a lot of people, they've started it with a passion, which you've just described, but that passion hasn't translated into them running a business that's as successful as they want. It gives them the lifestyle that you know they require or that they want. What are most pet businesses doing wrong, and how do you help them?
Well, I think the main thing that they're doing wrong is that they're thinking that it's going to be enough to love dogs. You know, they're thinking that it's going to be enough to love dogs and to be passionate about helping people. And for sure, you need that, you know, and that's a very worthy trait to have. But they tend to market the business in a way that sort of, you know, we love dogs, we love helping dogs, and they don't talk enough about the problems that people have got with their dogs. So they're marketing all wrong. Many of them, too, they're just doing sort of standard marketing, I would say, you know, social media type stuff, Facebook, but not in any structured, purposeful kind of way. You know, they're just really shouting about their services, and they think that being great at what they do, because a lot of them are, you know, a lot of them are, they are really passionate, they've done dog training courses, they're awesome trainers, they're just not known for being very awesome. So, you know, that's why they're eating beans every night and they're, you know, they're sick of the hours that they're working.
Yes. So I suppose it's the age-old thing where quite a lot you see small business owners, and this applies to social enterprises too. We have lots of social entrepreneurs listening to this show as well. But we see people running small businesses and social enterprises who are absolutely expert at the thing that they're good at, but they're not yet experts at either marketing or communication. And they, you're arguing that they need to be expert at that and find tried and tested, proven ways that actually generate...
That's exactly the same journey as I've gone on. You know, when I started my business, I knew very little about dogs or marketing, you know. So I went on a bit of a, I was passionate, and I wanted, when I quit my job, I wanted to, you know, work outside, and I wanted to work with dogs and not people. I had to go on like a dog training journey, a dog training education, to bring my dog training skills up to scratch. And then I have to do exactly the similar thing with the marketing, you know. I think we think when we get a business that it's like build it and they will come. Well, they won't, you know. Some will come, but if you really want the clients that you really want to bring into your business, that you really want to work with, then, you know, you need to be specialised and market yourself a lot better.
Yes, okay, great. And that is something that you address in your book, of course. Do you want to just give the name of the book, first of all?
Yeah, so it's Walk Yourself Wealthy, The Quick, Easy and No BS Guide to Transform Your Passion for Pooches into an Insanely Profitable and Fun Dog Walking Empire. That's a title and a half, isn't it?
It certainly is a title and a half, and I'm going to tell people how to get hold of that in a moment or two. But but you said yourself there, Dom, and this is interesting, that you've been on a journey from quitting your job to setting up your business and turning that into a successful business through to now helping other people in the pet industry to run successful businesses. So I'm going to ask you a personal question, if you don't mind. What were you doing before you set up in business on your own, and what made you decide to go, yeah, I'm going to run my own business?
I was a sales rep with Imperial Tobacco, believe it or not, of all things, for 10 years. Previous to that, I was a singer, but that might be a conversation for another time.
You're a singer. I'm a singer as well, you know, Dom, but if
really?
I sing, I'm threatened with violence, so people will pay me not to sing rather than pay me to sing.
Well, I can't have been that good at it, because I did end up quitting and getting a proper job as a sales rep. So I did that for 10 years, and it was a really good job. I enjoyed learning about sales and how sales worked, and it was a good job. I had bonuses, company car, lots of holidays, paid holiday. I'm struggling to think why I left that job now, actually, but I think it was because I was coasting, really, you know.
Right.
I didn't really want to do it for like another 30 years, which I think is the case with, like, you know, many people who have a midlife crisis, I suppose. And my passions at the time were, we'd recently adopted a dog de Bordeaux called Barry, who sadly passed away last year, but he's on the front cover of the How to Be a Dog Superhero book.
Yes.
And So, like any rescue dog you get, they come with like a bit of baggage, they come with some issues. So I took more of an interest in training, and I'd also been helping out on my local rescue centre as well, just walking the dogs who were away from being rehomed, you know. So that was, people always say, you know, do what you love, you know, if you're going to start a business, do something that you love. And that was what I thought of at the time, I could set up a premium dog adventure business. Where we take the dogs out for longer, we give them a real good workout, and then we take them home again, and they'll sleep until the owners come home. And that's where Pack Leader Dog Adventures came about. Now, I think what I'd, just to add something else as well, I'd always been, I don't know if I learned this from the cigarette business, but obviously with the cigarettes, you have expensive brands and you have brands that aren't so expensive, cheapo brands as well.
Yeah,
but it's essentially the same thing inside.
Right.
You know, it's the same thing that you're selling. So whether that sort of lesson came through, and I think I always knew if I wanted to start a business, I wanted it to be like a Harrods premium end type of business. So that's what I did. You know, I did adventures instead of dogs, and I charged twice as much as everybody else. And you know, within 6 to 12 months, I was full, you know, and business has never really looked back then, since then. So premium pricing's been a huge part of
principle. And premium pricing doesn't work unless you offer a premium service. Of course, you clearly thought through how to do something differently. And this is really interesting in a business area where lots of people might think, oh, yeah, people are going to buy on price. You know, I'm going to pay whatever the going rate is for my dog to be walked. And you said, no, I'm going to give dogs an adventure. And you attracted people who wanted something more, something different and something that was unique in terms of what you were providing. And that's absolutely fascinating, that journey that you were on there. But also how you mentioned that when you have a job with a company car and good bonuses, it can be a real comfort blanket, and people can be very reluctant to take the step to do what they really feel they want to do in terms of, say, starting a business. You did it, though, didn't you? And what would you say to someone who's sitting in employment at the moment but wants to start their own business?
Well, it's really difficult, isn't it? I think if you're passionate enough and you really want it enough, and by passionate, I don't mean just, like we said before, just loving the thing. You know, it doesn't matter. A lot of the things that we talked about with the pet business, they're applicable to any business, aren't they? Yeah. You know, lots of people might get their redundancy and open a cafe and think that just because they love the cafe that everybody else is going to love it in 6 months' time, the cafe is shut down, you know. Mm. This happens like all the time in every town, city all over the country, doesn't it? But you have to be prepared to invest in the marketing, I think. And if you're prepared to really invest and make the business work, then yeah, I would recommend going for it. But it is hard, and I had a lot of support from my wife, who's a deputy head teacher. You know, we had a bit of savings and stuff, so it wasn't like a complete and utter leap into the dark. Although it was, don't get me wrong, it was a huge step as well. Mm. But it is difficult. You know, they used to call it the golden handcuffs at the previous place where I used to work, you know, where you were in and you couldn't leave, you know, because it was too cushy almost.
Indeed. Well, you've demonstrated that you're clearly happy, fulfilled and enjoying the business that you're running there. And you mentioned having support from your wife, that, and you've also mentioned investing. And when I was asking you yesterday before we came on air about one lesson that you've learnt, one critical lesson that you've learnt, that your critical success factor, I think, was the wording that I used, and you mentioned investing in yourself, and lots of business owners don't necessarily feel they can invest in continuous professional development, we could call it that, if you like. What have you done that's made a difference then? What do you mean by investing in yourself?
I think investing in what's going to make your business grow, you know. Yeah. So first of all, like all this stuff that we talked about being being premium, like you said, you have to be good at what you do. Mm. You can sell rubbish once, but people aren't going to buy it twice.
No.
So you have to be great at what you do. So I got great at dog training. You know, I certainly got good enough at dog training. I wouldn't say I'm a great dog trainer, but I'm very good at dog training. I'm very good at making it sound easy for pet dog owners to understand so they can take action and start moving forward with their dog.
Right.
Then once I'd done that, I really started investing in the marketing side of things. And I continued to invest. I've probably invested two or three times as much in the marketing side of improving my marketing knowledge than I have in the dog training side of it.
Mm.
But many, certainly in the pet industry, we have a lot of dog trainers. Recently ran a pet business boot camp up in Sunderland. And for a lot of the people in the room, that was the first time they'd ever put their hand in their pocket and invested in the marketing side of things, you know. We call them seminar junkies in the dog training world, up to my list, because they just do dog training course after dog training course after another dog training course. And they're constantly building up their dog training knowledge, but they're not invested, but they're not... You know, that knowledge is making them a better trainer, but it's not necessarily making them any more money, you know. So investing in the marketing side of things is crucial, I think. It's been instrumental to how my business has gone.
right, grand, superb. So you have continually invested in that, and you have continually developed your own knowledge and expertise in terms of what will work. Now, Pack Leader Dog Adventures appears to be thriving. You've set up, well, actually, before we mention websites, we've mentioned in passing a couple of books, Walk Yourself Wealthy, aimed at people running dog training and pet businesses. And you've also mentioned How to Be Your Dog Superhero. So if listeners have a dog and want to train your dog, look after your dog, that's a brilliant book itself. So both of those. But also your own website, your website. And you've got a couple of things on not so far away from us here in Sheffield. You've got a couple of things on this weekend in Leeds, I think, Dom. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm doing two talks, a How to Be a Dog Superhero seminar and a Grow Your Pet Business Fast seminar in Leeds on Saturday. They're the last two. We've been doing a bit of a tour this year. We've been all going around the UK, taking this to America next year as well. But this is the last day in the UK on Saturday, yeah, so that'll be good fun.
Right, superb. That's marvellous. Now, I've tweeted from my Twitter account, Jamie Veach, a link to your Twitter account and to that of our other guest today. So anyone who can find details and contact you through that. You don't have to be a Twitter user to follow me, Jamie Veach, on Twitter, twitter.com, Jamie Veach. So people can find you that way. But, of course, you have a website as well, which I'd like you to give the details of so that people can find you there.
Sure. So probably the best one, which relates to the Walk Yourself Wealthy book for the business side of things, is growyourpetbusinessfast.com. So people can go there and they can sign up for my 333 ideas, which will help them to grow their pet business. Great for dog walkers, dog trainers, dog groomers. I'll give them, you know, they can buy the book and stuff like that there as well. Or the book, both of the books are available on Amazon, Audible, and on Kindle store as well.
Brilliant. So the books are available on Amazon, Audible, Kindle, etc. People can go to growyourpetbusinessfast.com. You can sign up to your tips, your ideas. Those are free to receive through email. And people can find out a lot more about you there as well, Dom. So that's superb. We could carry on. I'd love to, but the clock is ticking, and the presenters of Sheffield Live's fantastic folk music programme will be throwing me out of the studio shortly. So
well, we don't want that.
Indeed. So I'm going to have to draw it to a close, but thank you so much for joining me on the line, Dom. This is Dom Hodgson, Pack Leader Dog Adventures. Hope all goes well this weekend. Thank you, Dom.
Thanks so much, Jamie. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. This is Business Live, Sheffield Live's weekly business and social enterprise programme with me, Jamie Veach. We've been talking today with Dom Hodgson. He runs Pack Leader Dog Adventures. He's written a book for people running pet businesses, Walk Yourself Wealthy. It's a simple guide. We'll tweet the link to that as well. And he's also written a book, How to Be Your Dog's Superhero. Again, we'll tweet the link to that and to Dom's website that he mentioned. Before Dom was on the programme, Steve Knowles, MD of Knowles Warwick, was on the show. Returning to the studio, he was described by one of our listeners as an accountant with a rare combination of heart and soul, and he was talking about his predictions for the budget next week. The Chancellor, Philip Hammond, will announce the budget on Wednesday, the 22nd of November. What would Steve like to see in the budget? Well, he ran through that on the show today. So if you've only just tuned in, don't panic, because you can catch up with today's programme on the podcast section of the Sheffield Live website. It will be available from about 11 a.m. today, the 17th of November. Just go to sheffieldlive.org, look up radio shows, find Business Live, and you'll be able to find today's programme. Whilst you're there, you could find last week's show. We had the Marxist capitalist CEO of £31 million turnover, Webmart, on the programme. And he was talking about how Webmart has been profitable for 21 years, how proud he is to pay his tax, and his philosophy in terms of maximising not just financial, but intellectual and emotional returns. That was a wide-ranging, interesting discussion. I met Simon at the MAID Entrepreneurship Festival last week, and he gave a fantastic interview. Also on the show last week, Vincent Tremu, internationally acclaimed photographer. Now,
what's going on with your business, with your social enterprise. Don't forget, we're always keen to hear from you. If you want to comment, if you want to put yourself forward to be on the programme, if you want to suggest a topic we should cover, then just get in touch. Email jamie@sheffieldlive.org or send a text to 07904 272 200. Find me, Jamie Veitch, on Twitter. Find Sheffield Live on Twitter too. Now, we'll be back on air next Friday, but don't go away now, because next up on Sheffield Live, it's our fantastic folk music programme. Thank goodness it's folk. That's on from 10 all the way through to noon. And we're going to play out now with a track of music. This one has been chosen by Dom Hodgson, who is our final guest today. The track that he's chosen is by A-ha. It's Take On Me. We'll play that now. Thanks so much for listening. Thanks to our guests. Thanks to Sangeeta in the studio as sound engineer. Back on air next Friday. Enjoy A-ha.
We're open for business live.